Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy, before we actually get into the topic of the day.
Yes?
You smell like rabbits.
Oh my gosh, yes.
What were you doing?
I was
it's not that I spend a lot of time with rabbits, and I don't know a whole lot about their aromas, but I know what braised rabbit smells like.
I was going to say, unfortunately, I don't smell like rabbits from the farm. I smell like rabbits that just got put into a pan. Yeah, I was just braising rabbits, which I love so much this time of the year. And we're getting these just gorgeous rabbits with these nice, big, meaty legs. And kind of the fun thing about rabbit is you utilizing the whole animal.
The livers are so good.
Oh, my gosh. The livers, the kidneys are so good. And the carcasses make good stock. I mean, it's a light. Thin stock, because obviously those little bones don't have very much gelatin in them, but
nice for
it's
summer
a
soups.
Pretty exactly it's a pretty light stock that it produces. Now I'm using my stock to braise in this case, but we may have some left over, so we actually got squabs in yesterday. I had rabbit stock from my last batch of rabbits as well, and I have a little bit of quail stock as well. So yesterday when I knew I was getting in fresh rabbits today, we put all those three stocks together and reduced them down by 50%, and that's what I used to braise these rabbits. And oh my goodness, when you're actually, you know, the difference between a stock where you're using bones and braising something is huge, because that stock that's produced by that is, with all that meat in there, is just going to be tremendous. And having the other two, the birds in with it too, the stock birds, it's just going to be so good. So I seared them, and that's why.
Hang on one
second. That's why
I
smell so much. I smell like seared rabbit.
Yeah, yeah. The rabbits that you have. Mm-hmm. That's why I smell so much. That's just a great.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. When I was braising it, I looked at Everardo and I'm like, oh, God, Tony's going to be like, oh, my God, you smell terrible.
So, you do smell like seared rabbit. I love seared rabbit. Mm. So where's the rabbit coming from? Did you snare them in your garden?
No. Although there is a really huge one that's living on my property. And I'm like, honestly, I've never seen a rabbit so big in my life. I can't get a photograph of the thing because it's also obviously fast as lightning. And I have foxes that live on my farm too. So there's a lot of them. And gigantic groundhogs. And
very big, very fast rabbit. Sounds like NFL-ready rabbit.
But the rabbits that I'm working with come from Pennsylvania. It's a small farm in Pennsylvania, and they're just really spectacular. But you can get rabbits from all over. But they're lean, so that's another thing to think about.
For listeners that, you know, want to try something, it's not that hard to work with.
No, it's easy. And they're so mildly flavored. They're pretty. To me, they have a sweet tone to them, very clean tasting. So, I mean, really, you can't go wrong as long as all of your, anything that you're putting it with, I mean, you could go, you know, I think of mushrooms or, light things that have beautiful flavor. Certainly carrots, mirepoix is important in the braising process. So I sear them. I get them nice and brown on both sides. That's the hind legs and the forelegs. As soon as we debone the rabbits, we brown the carcasses. So that also goes. I actually throw that in as well, because all it does is add even more to the flavor of that broth. Or that braising liquid, and I added fresh rosemary from my garden and whole peppercorns and bay leaves, and I put a little bit of white wine in. So it's braising gently while we're doing this show.
And to use the meat from those rabbits, mm-hmm. you can just pull it off the bone. Once it's cooled down, you take it out of that stock, cool it down, and you can just pull the meat right off the bones.
Absolutely.
Right?
It should be super tender. When I start to say they're lean, so they are good for you. It's a great thing to eat. But also you have to remember the fact that they're mildly flavored and that they're lean. So you want to think about why I'd started to talk about accompaniments. And
Well, the most important one's going to be that sauce that you get from mm-hmm. the braising liquid, right?
Yes, and also when you're talking about the legs. So what I had a dish in France. I'm trying to remember if you were with me. I think I can't even remember where I was, but it was several trips ago, where they had braised the rabbit, and the forelegs, which have very little meat on them, obviously is what they picked. And so they made a salad with a lot of celery, good olive oil, salt and pepper, a little bit of parsley, and cornichon, and oh my gosh, it was just, and a little acid. I don't know, they probably used some sort of vinegar, but I use lime juice, and it's just so refreshing and so good and so nice because it is a meat salad, you know, and it doesn't have any mayonnaise in
meat salad. Now the male listeners are going to pay attention.
It's really good. And so that's what's fun about working with the rabbit. So I served the braised legs. I did fresh mirepoix. So I did my broth had great flavor, reduced it down some, strained it. And then I did a saute of a brunoise, which is the smallest of dice, of carrots and onion and celery and a little bit of shallot. And that became the garnish for the broth. And put the, you know, we would just heat the leg up in that broth with all the beautiful mirepoix and then added a little bit more fresh rosemary, pulled that out. So it just perfumed it, hit it with a little bit of extra virgin and olive oil on top. So again, it gets a little bit of fat feeling because there's just no fat in the dish, and garnished it with chanterelle mushrooms. And it was so pretty. And then made the salad from the legs, which are we getting local celery right now or not?
Not yet.
Okay. But when we do, that's so good when it's local. And I make a celery soup from local celery, but you could make the rabbit salad with that. The fresh celery is so pretty. It's just, and oh my gosh, you can't believe the color that you get from it, the bright fresh flavor. And then the other product you get from the whole rabbit are the loins. And those are so good. And if you cut them off
the
bone.
The loins, so imagine your rabbit, when you break down the rabbit, you're taking all four legs off, right?
Right.
And then on the rest of the carcass, you have the two big muscles that run down the back.
Right, which is called the loin.
And so you would just take those right off.
Cut that right off the bone.
With a sharp knife. And then you have those two to work with.
And then you have, the only thing you're really left with are the flank steaks, which are not the best texture.
There's not much to them.
Yeah, it's very thin. It's very flappy looking. And I usually just throw that in with my braising. It just adds flavor.
Those ground up with the livers make pretty good mousse.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely grind them and do stuff with them for sure, especially if you have quantity. And then also the tiny little tenderloins are underneath the loin, which they're almost, I mean, there's almost no tender.
They're the toothpick-sized tenderloins.
They are kind of. So I usually throw that in with the braise too, just to add flavor. But the loins are great because you can sear them, cook them to medium, or you can grill them, you know, with herbs and olive oil. And I mean, they're just, so I usually serve the loins with risotto, but I mean, there are just a million things you can do. So rabbits are really a lot of fun. I really enjoy, and I think, you know, I do admit to really wanting to work with rabbits in the springtime, but just that whole sort of idea of serving rabbit near Easter is just a little bit heinous.
I'm so amused by that.
Oh my God, I can't handle it. I remember the first time I tried to put rabbit on a menu near, or else I wasn't thinking, and I was going to put it on an Easter menu, and you're like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, but see, now I'm old and wizened, and I'm amused by all these things.
Well, so now we're well past Easter, so yeah, it's time to play with some rabbit.
What I was thinking, that this program, when I launched into the rabbit business with you, was reprieve. You know, the weather, finally we have a reprieve from all the rains.
Such a beautiful day.
From the cold weather, from the gray. We have summer beautifully here.
Yeah, it's a nice summer.
And there's a bit of a reprieve. So I guess that when you look up the podcast for this, it'll be the reprieve program. It's going to drive the producer Luke crazy. But there is another reprieve, and it's personally important to me.
Oh?
Yeah.
What's that?
So you know, I have a relatively complicated health history.
Yes.
I took a number of medications. I've been taking them medications for a long time.
Okay, yes.
I'm not getting serious.
All right, okay.
I'm going to get joyful.
Okay.
So my medication is steady enough that I had a three-month period where I could drink no wine.
That's horrible.
Frankly, you don't want that to be... I don't want that for anyone, but I definitely don't want that for me.
No.
Most of all, I don't want that for me.
Right. Got it.
After 90 days of nothing, I mean, I could taste a little bit and spit, and you can do the analysis.
It's like torture for you.
You can teach, but the actual enjoyment of the product, the entire point of the product, it's not the getting drunk. It's the, when you see music and you read it on a catalog, you know, it's Brahms Third performed by so-and-so. I expect that to be a good recording. I expect that's going to be wonderful, and I expect to hear every note. And I expect that now I cannot hear anything.
Well, that's a shame.
But I know it's there, so it's sort of terrible. But I'm on a budget now.
Okay, how many?
Two glasses of wine per week.
Oh, good. Well, that's definitely better than zero.
I've actually begun to write a blog about
what those two glasses are
going to
be.
Yeah, because they're very important to me.
It's going
to
be the best wine in the
whole
world.
People ask you, what's the best wine in the world, or what's the wine that you really want, or, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the next one.
Right.
You know, I want the next one. I want another one. I want it to occur to me that it's very, very important, and I want to have it, and I want to have it at a moment where it works its best. I want to hear that Brahms in the leather chair that's in my living room on an afternoon with the windows open. You know, that's...
Right. Good.
Those are all the things. So I've had a reprieve.
That's been a good change.
So that encourages me for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel a reprieve from now the season's changed?
It's the daylight. For me, I just absolutely love this time of year because the days are so long. I feel a reprieve from the darkness. I never realized, and I grew up a good part of my childhood in northern Indiana where it's, you know, the sun doesn't shine a lot there in the wintertime, at least when I was growing up. We had about 145 inches of snowfall a season there and in the wintertime, and I never really thought about it. And I know it bothered my mother. And they ended up moving to Charleston, South Carolina, when I finished high school.
When you finally finished high school.
It didn't take any extra time. I guess that's how I felt about school.
If you need extra time, you can take extra time, Cindy.
When I finished high school, my parents immediately moved to Charleston, South Carolina.
And did they tell you about it?
They did. It was very nice of them. And I went off to college in southern Indiana. But yeah, no, I mean, my favorite part of this time of the year is that relief of having such long days. And we've, like I said a few minutes ago, we've just had such a gorgeous summer. I mean, we did have a lot of rain in the beginning, but that's been very good for everything on the land. I mean, I've seen flowers that I haven't seen before on the farm. My trees are so much healthier. Some of my trees actually were not doing very well, and I didn't realize that it was rainfall. It was absolutely had to be rainfall because I literally had a couple of trees that I thought I was going to have to take down, and they have really come back to life.
That's great.
It is great. And I just feel like all kinds of things are popping up. So anyway, I love the length of the days in this time of the year. I'm a winter person for sure, but I love the snow and that time of year.
Yeah, sunshine seems like it's good for your morale.
It is extremely good for your morale.
So in the next segment, we'll get into more specifics about summer markets and produce and fruit, because this year will be a lot stronger and very different from last year.
It really will be, yeah.
And a few recipes about things we want to play with those items. And when we get into the third segment, then we're going to have a really vicious chef's challenge. Yeah, that's. I'm sure that Cindy's been sharpening her knife or a pen all day. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about summer's arrival. Yay. A bit of a reprieve on a few things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have a pretty nice market coming up to us.
So exciting.
I mean, the asparagus was excellent.
And long. I mean, we had a long season for asparagus.
Solid
that was
6 weeks
of
really high quality.
That was so fun.
Which is pretty unusual.
And that's because of the rain, I guess? Or the cooler temperatures?
Rain at the right times.
Okay. Good.
And cool enough to keep it going. You know from looking at the asparagus, when those ends become loose, when the points become looser, like they've unknit a little bit,
mm-hmm.
that's when they're done.
Okay.
They're not that nice.
So what's coming up?
Well, we have peas on the way. You always think of peas on the way.
So exciting.
Lettuces, we're in the middle of lettuces. We're in the middle of a lot of greens.
So what happens with lettuces? I mean, I'm growing some, and I don't understand. When I cut them, some of them are like getting this hard center thing going on. What is happening with that? Are they bolting? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Is it done? Is a plant done?
That means
done?
You don't want to eat that hard center.
Darn. Okay.
Yeah, you probably just chop the whole thing off. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, some of my lettuces came back from last year. I didn't know they would do that.
That's great.
Yeah, they were, and they were some
especially
of them,
as well. It wasn't that cold of a winter.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But I mean, that's there's all kinds of lettuce that's out there, whether it's the soft lettuces or more robust greens.
Yeah, we just got our first collard greens. Oh my gosh, they're so good.
The little baby collards this time of the year can be really, really good. Little baby kale this time of the year can be really, really good.
I love it when collards are young and tender, for
sure. One of the things that people end up struggling with, I think, is making a dressing that is strong enough and dressing the greens enough. That little tender, like oak leaf or Celanova, which can be great and crunchy and snappy, even the freshest doesn't require dressing up, you know, any real weight. It can be lightly dressed. It just needs to be thoroughly dressed and seasoned. Don't forget salt in your salads.
Right.
But when people, with their dressing baby collards or dandelion or, you know, great big spicy arugula.
Mustard greens.
Yeah. Little kale.
That's where you're strong. Extra virgin olive oil.
I have a bunch of red Russian kale, and it's like, You have to dress it thoroughly, and it's not you're not in fear of it wilting. The stuff is, you know, three times stiffer and three times less. I don't want to say three times thicker than the sort of much more flimsy lettuces. So that stuff, the dressing should be a little stronger. It should be a little more acidic, for the sake of breaking that down, and let it sit for a little bit. And if you put delicate things with it, it's not going to work. But crunchy cucumbers,
get blown away.
Yeah, if you do cucumbers and a mandolin super thin, you'll never notice them. If you cut them thick enough so they have a little bit of a crunch to them, you'll notice them.
Or it's a good time to add nuts to something. Walnuts and pecans, things like that stand up to hearty greens,
or even some of those kales.
Nut oils for big greens like that too, not just corn oil, which you might use for the more delicate lettuce, or a light extra virgin olive oil. You need to go hearty extra virgin or nut oil.
Yeah. Mustard
also is good with the heartier lettuces as well in the vinaigrette.
Yeah. I made a dressing last night with whole grain mustard and had fat slices of cucumber and red Russian kale in there. It was really darn good.
Good. Yeah.
But that's the point, is to be sort of strategic about, you know, not just, oh, it's a salad, so we treat them all the same. But this is a year with a wealth of product coming into the markets. So there is that coming. Behind that, right now you started to get, it's funny, you get cauliflower and broccoli two times usually during the year. You get the stuff now that's much milder. This is really good soup cauliflower. This is really good broccoli for little quick stir fries and that sort of thing. The stuff that will come late October, maybe after a first frost, that stuff has much more robust flavor.
I never thought about that, but yeah, that's true.
Yeah, now's the time you can actually use those guys for salads or for frying. I mean, tempura with, you know, made with cauliflower and broccoli that come in the spring will be great.
Yeah, we're still getting sweet cherries and sour cherries and blueberry.
We're gonna have a big year.
Strawberries
were excellent this year, especially the ones from the Eastern Shore. And then all the orchard fruits have started out. And sweet cherries and sour cherries are both abundant and good flavors. And the sour cherries came earlier than they usually do. Usually they're right on the tail of the sweets. But literally 1 week later, and the sours have started. And blueberries right on their heels too. All of those things keep the prices more reasonable. So this is probably a very good year if you like to put up. This is probably a very good year to preserve or conserve.
Buy some things in quantity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'll have things of excellent quality, and the prices should be pretty fair. And the only things I've not seen in berries yet really have been raspberries, black raspberries, and blackberries. Blackberries usually take the longest, but, I mean, you've got all kinds of good stuff coming in there. The orchard fruits, I just gave you one of the very first nectarines.
It smells so good. I'm excited.
These guys have one tree. So they were out on a farm stand on the Eastern Shore. A little further north from us in the middle of Pennsylvania, and that's usually where the best orchard fruit come from that we get in the market here. And that's all right by the Maryland line, just a little bit cooler. And it'll be, usually it's peaches, some peaches first, and then nectarines. But that's unusually. But white peaches, peaches, nectarines. You start to get a few summer apples, like third week of July, which is always seems counterintuitive. But they're really most of those are pretty good salad apples and not bad for apple butter either.
I love the white peaches with lobster. Such a great combination. You know, and even if you're just butter poaching the lobster tail and serving it just sort of warm with some tender lettuces and have slices of the white peaches on the plate and a little citrusy vinaigrette. Maybe I reduce down fresh lime juice, orange juice, and lemon juice until it's almost syrupy and then add corn oil and a little bit of salt. And
so that serves as the dressing.
It does. We actually heat up the lobster in that, add a little bit of shallot and a little bit of butter poached garlic, and that whole thing becomes a dressing for the lettuce and the peaches.
Is that cooking lobster from raw in that?
No, we steam the lobsters. And for about 6 minutes, we buy 1 pound culls, which means it's missing one of its claws. So they're small lobsters, but they're really nice. And we cook them about 6 minutes and shock them and then remove them from their shell. And that's what we gently heat up in that vinaigrette and often add fresh herbs to it, maybe chervil or tarragon, just freshly snipped over the lettuces. It's a very pretty, beautifully perfumed salad. But, yeah, I love white peaches.
Well, you have the time of the year that will be perfect for that. Maybe that's a different, a lot fancier July 4th picnic if you're making
that'd be fun.
If you're making that.
Mm-hmm.
The how are shellfish prices this time of the year?
They're still too high. I'm surprised at lobster prices, quite frankly.
Usually they drop in the summer.
Yeah, usually it's pretty happy time. It is not. And no, prices are high right now. So we're definitely having a bit of a lamb price issue too. So there's some things that are higher than they should be this time of the year.
And in the summer, usually the price drops enough on lobsters that I look forward to grilling lobsters and making a big corn salad, you know, just grilling them, cracking them open, making a corn salad with favas and a lobster and some of the spring garlic. There's a lot of abundant spring garlic again this year.
Yeah, I have chives that came back from last year too, and they're big. And I went to cut those yesterday, and boy, do they smell exactly like garlic. And I was thinking, I should just make a soup with these because they're too big to use. And they're really hard, but not, you know, they're not as tender as they could be. And I think it would make a really pretty soup. And that would be good with lobster or shrimp as a sauce, not as a soup. But or you could make a shrimp and chive soup, too.
The thing that's most abundant usually this time of the year is zucchini. You got any fun ideas for zucchini?
I love this out. We're doing zucchini carpaccio right now, and we use a mandolin, slice them, do about 30 slices on the plate. Obviously, you wash it really well first and dry it, and then do your slices and just lay them in circles on the plate, cover the whole plate, a little bit of fresh lime juice, a light extra virgin olive oil, salt and pepper, fresh cilantro, and then any kind of hard cheese that you really love. Right now we're using Reggiano, but I just opened a piece of Pecorino that we got in the other day that is really beautiful, and I'm going to switch to the Pecorino today. But something that, and that has a high level of acidity to that piece of cheese, and it's just a good firm piece. But anything that you like, I used to use at one point. I used Kool-Aid on there. I've grated Berkswell on top of there, but some sort of hard, salty, hopefully a somewhat acidic cheese on that, and it's so good. But I microplane it, so it's fine. You don't want big
so
pieces.
It looks like a snowfall.
It does look like a snowfall.
Did you put acid in the zucchini?
Lime juice. Lime cilantro, juice. Extra virgin, salt, pepper, and the cheese. With the zucchini soup, and they're so pretty. I mean, the color is just so brilliant when they're fresh.
This kind of soup is pretty quick.
Oh, it's super quick, and it's super easy, and it's inexpensive. So I saute several onions and a little bit of shallot and butter and very little. I try to keep the fat to almost nothing. And then just until they're tender, I don't let it brown in any way. And then add the sliced zucchini, just saute that for maybe a minute or two. You have to have a big bottom to a wide pot so you can really, you know, get everything not all bunched up. You want it to be sort of in one layer. Saute the zucchini and then cover it with, I used light chicken stock. And add a little bit of salt and pepper. And just all it has to do is cook for like 20 minutes. It's very quick for a soup. And when I go to puree it, I add extra virgin olive oil. And I do add, at this point, I add Reggiano cheese to it. And you could certainly skip the cheese, but I love that since I'm not adding cream, there is really no dairy. Otherwise, it does richen the soup. And obviously, it gives it that wonderful flavor. And the zucchini and the Reggiano are so great together. And the olive oil also gives it a little bit of richness. And that's, I don't even have to strain it. I just puree it, and there it goes.
With the Reggiano, do you need to use any of the salt, or is that sufficient?
A little bit of salt, yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, you need a little.
When you serve that, any garnish?
Goat cheese. Crumbled Vermont goat cheese. And actually, we put a little bit more extra virgin olive oil on top, but you could garnish that with a lot of things.
At this time of the year, I'm always looking for ways to use zucchini flowers. That would be pretty on there, or maybe a fried flour.
Well, we're doing wild sockeye salmon grilled with the skin on.
That's right, sockeye salmon season.
Yeah, it's so great, and it's again, just looking at it, it's so deep orange. It's such a pretty fish.
The sockeye always reminds it's a different fish from the salmon that you get.
It does have the
deep sea. It has a different flavor.
Yeah,
fat content is not the same.
Exactly,
and the fish is smaller, and it's almost. It's going to sound ridiculous, almost trouty.
No, you're right. It does have
salmon.
It is very different. You're right. It's still salmon, but it is different.
And it does have, like you said, that really bright orange color.
And we're doing squash blossom beignets, but some of my zucchini are small enough, still attached with the flower. So we just cut it in half and do beignet with that. And oh my gosh, that's so good. And we had fresh morels on the plate and a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. And we put a little bit of fresh basil mayonnaise on the side in case a guest would like that for either the fish or the zucchini blossom. It's a little odd, but it's a little odd for the fish. Not really, but it's really good for the squash blossom. And always my goal with my plates is that everything on the plate is a perfect bite. This is probably one of the few times that's not true. It's a little bit of a separate situation. It's almost like you need to have a bite of the morels and the salmon together and then eat some of the squash blossom or the zucchini and have some basil mayonnaise with that and then go back and start over again because a bite of everything does not make sense, which is, like I said, super unusual for me. But I love all the components, and I think they go well with the fish.
Sounds less like a design dish and more like what you want to eat.
Pretty much. You're right.
Well, and then before too long, the first tomatoes will come.
Oh, well, we all are looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, there's a variety that have a nickname, 4th of July tomatoes, that don't always come on the 4th of July. But there are two people in our markets that actually show up with those. And they look like the sort of a typical red tomato, but smaller, not a cherry, not as little as even like an Italian cherry.
Okay.
Slightly bigger than that. And they're pretty tart. They're very good cooking tomatoes.
Well, we can use those.
They're great tomatoes for spiedini, for cooking on a little spear, a brochette.
Okay.
So if that expensive lamb
that's next week.
Needs to be on a brochette.
Yeah. Might be a good way to eat lamb when it's
expensive.
Usually
come a little bit later. Really, we haven't had any big heat yet. As soon as there's big heat, we all of a sudden will start getting some of those tomatoes. Tomatoes coming out of fields, be patient. The good ones will not really come till August. You will have them showing up all through July, but the good ones won't come till August. Eggplants will come before that. Peppers will come after the tomatoes start coming.
What do you like to do with blueberries?
Lots of things. You know, one of the fellows working with us, very interesting to me, pickled them.
Huh.
And served them with pork chop.
I like that. Oh, I bet that's really good.
Pretty terrific, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, pretty that's terrific cool. Garnish for a pork chop, which everyone seems to like pickled things these days, so I certainly always have.
I have to admit that, and some of the staff have been surprised when they've seen me do this, that I have a bowl of blueberries with milk on for my employee meal. And I grew up with that. You know, it's just... Again, it's probably Pennsylvania Dutch, but it's just super, super fun way. But obviously,
no,
it couldn't be any more complicated.
It's the 5-year-old in you, that's all.
It is the 5. But yeah, but with blueberries, it's, cooking them down, they have they have such a great capacity for slow cooking, and a little bit of sugar and some sort of citrus. We have blood oranges right now in the kitchen, so I do actually like to add blood oranges and lime juice to them when they're cooking down and make something for foie gras or for bird. And also talking about all the cherries, we're doing a compote right now with the local sweet cherries, strawberries, and a little bit of raspberries, and cooking it down with a little bit of red wine, just a touch of fresh orange juice, and a tiny bit of sugar, and that has been so great for the magre. So that with a cornmeal cake is not a bad. We make little cornmeal pancakes with our cornbread mixture. That's not a bad thing. So what do you like to do with the local cherries, Tony?
Well, season like this, I mostly eat them. I tell you, we started doing this last year at home, and now I think we have tried to encourage a lot of our bartenders to do this. Make your own cocktail cherries.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it was definitely sour cherries and using some anise, some very good red vermouth, Corpano Antica or Punta May, something along those lines. And then a little bit of cognac. Season it however you like. Things that are conducive, a little star anise, a little juniper maybe.
And then you preserve them just like you would.
Yeah, and then preserve them. You cook them, seed them, cook them. I cook them with the seasonings with vermouth.
How long do they last?
Cognac is the last thing.
Once you open them.
If you're just making preserves for the refrigerator, then you're good, and you're good for a while after you open them.
Okay.
And probably a month pretty easily. But
I would just alcohol.
Yeah, if you get enough. You have alcohol from vermouth and a little more from some cognac. You can put other spirits in there as well. You could put rye whiskey in there if you wanted to. But boy, oh boy, the ones we did last year with the Carpano and the cognac, those are pretty darn good.
That's great. That's cool.
I'm going to try to talk her into doing chocolates with those inside. Anyway, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, Cindy Wolf is going to suffer through the most vicious chef's challenge.
Lovely. Excellent.
The second most vicious chef's challenge she's ever faced.
Oh,
all of that and more on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So, Cindy, don't you feel like it's a reprieve from fancy cooking going into summertime?
Definitely. Just things lighten up.
Since our program's all about reprieve, it's really just about here is summer and, boy, it's a lot nicer out.
I know for our prep, we use a lot less stock. A lot less reduction sauces in the summertime, obviously, and we turn towards relishes or vinaigrettes or, oils, flavored oils on the plates. I mean, it's definitely a lightening up of the food, obviously, and food does become less complicated. There are less steps to things that you're making. You're using a lot more fresh product that wouldn't be around, obviously isn't around in the wintertime, or wouldn't be appropriate in the wintertime. So it's a big difference in how we cook.
Yeah, I think it's also you want to celebrate the produce that's available to
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's inspirational time of the year, because in the wintertime you're sort of looking, you have to look for things and I have to think a little bit harder about what I'm going to do with my menu, and in the summertime I'm constantly inspired because something gorgeous.
Wait to see what's going to show up. Yeah.
Right, something gorgeous is always coming in the back door, and now that I have my own small garden, I have things that I produce as well, and that's super inspirational for me. So that's what drives the menu this time of the year. What kind of wines are you thinking about with all this wonderful fruit and vegetables that are coming up?
Well, it's funny. I'd asked you about, is it a bit of a reprieve from some of the fancier dishes or, fancier food, saucy food that you have in a lot of the winter months and fall and spring, at least when it's still chilly. I think you get a little bit of a reprieve from fancy wines. In other words, it does not mean that I don't want to drink something really, really good and mature and interesting from time to time. But the you've heard me talk before about sink wines in our house.
Right.
We have those big old wash sinks, and sort of the open any time. Not really part of. There's a pretty good collection in the cellar. But other than that, the open for any purpose stuff is in these big old wash sinks. You find that's always rosés, whites, easy sparklers. You know, not champagne necessarily. Mm-hmm. Although champagne once in a while will work its way in there. And then lighter reds, you know, Rosa di Montalcino, little Cote de Rhone, easy Crianza, Rioja, good reds, Zinfandel, you know, just happy stuff, Primitivo, happy stuff to drink. And the whites and the sparkling and the rosés, they come out a little bit faster than the reds do. You know, just based on stocking the sinks, I would say that the pink and the rosé, the pink and the sparkling go a little faster than the white or the red. And the white goes a little faster than the red. So
that makes sense.
That makes sense for eating lighter through the summertime for sure. And mostly stronger vegetables are not going to be particularly conducive for bigger, heavier reds.
And you're probably eating more seafood and fish this time of year anyway. So, you know, really do think lighter wines, for sure.
Well, and vegetable-based dishes, and that's kind of... I done a grill out on Sunday with... there was beef, there was chicken, and there were 9 different vegetables, you know, in various guises and different dishes. And nothing was warm besides the beef and the chicken, and that... In summertime, that's nice.
Easy way to deal with things when you're cooking for a group of people. It's good.
And it was an occasion, but as fancy as I got was Chateauneuf du Pape. It was not, and a relatively young one. It's delicious, but not, you know, not crazy.
Yeah, I was in the hardware store yesterday, and I was really looking hard at some of the smokers they have in there, because I've never owned one at my house, and I just think it would be so much fun to have one of those, especially where I live.
What do you want to smoke?
Well, what immediately comes to mind are pork ribs, but a whole lot of stuff. I'd also like to smoke some salmon, quite frankly. I think that would be a lot of fun, and I'd like to fool around with that a little bit. But, yeah, some sort of pork, probably pork loins or maybe even pork tenders. But, you know, pork ribs are the best because they have so much fat and, you know, they're fun to eat and inexpensive. So, but, yeah, they had a video. Actually, I was standing in the store watching a video that they had for these different smokers they have. And it's pretty cool the way that they work. They're pretty high tech, actually. So it didn't used to be that way. So it's kind of cool that those are out there.
So now soft crabs are about to be done, right?
Most likely.
So before the soft crabs are done, which is, you know, summer soft crabs always tell me summer is coming. Summer arrives. I know they're going to go away. What is the thing that someone has to do with a soft crab?
You know, I'm sure people...
Besides the Marylander's soft shell crab sandwich.
I personally like some sort of salsa with them. We actually recently got some amazing peas from Anson's Mill down in Charleston, and a guest couldn't have cucumbers, actually, that I had been serving with our soft shells. So we put on a relish that we were serving on the lamb. And it just, one, it looked really great on there. And two, I knew it tasted good. So it was the purple eyestalk peas, which are these tiny little...
Purple eyestalk peas.
They look like black-eyed peas, but they're purple, even to burgundy colored, really, with a little eye on them. And they are an old type of pea grown in the South. And they're little, oh my gosh, and they have such a good flavor. And I cook them with a little bit of bacon and andouille sausage and tasso ham, good chicken and veal stock, a bit of Tabasco, a little bit of fresh rosemary. I actually put a little bit of saffron in there, onion, shallot, garlic, and they're wonderful. It's a wonderful product. And so we make a broth for the lamb with that, and then we drain the beans and make a relish with, I mash and chop garlic with salt on my cutting board, add a little bit of extra virgin olive oil to it to make a paste, and then I start chopping tomatoes and reserve every bit of the juice and everything from the tomato, and it's all kind of intermingling on the cutting board with that garlic, olive oil, salt paste, and then I scrape it into my bowl and cut more tomatoes and add a little bit of fresh chive, and then add those drained purple eye stock peas, which you could do with all kinds of, you could use all kinds of different beans, including lentils, actually, and then added extra virgin olive oil to that and serve that over the fried soft shell crab, which I do. I just marinate mine in buttermilk and then go into a cornmeal breading procedure, which is cornmeal, all-purpose flour, salt, and cayenne pepper. And the relish with the soft shell was really good. We really were happy. Yeah,
I like soft shells with relishes, but I also like them with beans, so...
Yeah, it was
fun. You're getting both of those done.
And I've also, and I also serve them with, it's a julienne cucumber and upland cress salad, which is nice, bright, and fresh. Or I've done tiny capers, lemon brown butter, which is honestly my very favorite. It's just perfect for the soft shell.
I'll take the beans and the cucumber salad.
It was
that
fun.
Sounds good to me.
Good.
Do you know why I call this the second most vicious chef challenge?
I have no idea. Is it the situation?
No.
Okay.
It's because there are no hot dogs in this one.
Okay, good. All right.
No convenience store involved in the scenario.
Okay.
So the stipulation is...
Huh. Oh, boy.
Stipulation is you have to make three courses. The first course, a main course, and dessert.
Okay.
Whammy.
Okay. Oats, honey, canned sardines, really? Canned sardines.
Some people like canned sardines.
I do like my...
My dad loves canned sardines.
Okay. So. Bacon. I'm not saying people don't like them. Bacon, your choice. Zucchini, tahini. Tatsoi, golden sea bream, nectarines, jalapeno peppers, cannellini beans, herbs, extra virgin olive oil, butter and oils, vinegars, baking cabinet, and eggs. Okay, so you said a first, second, and a dessert?
Yeah.
Okay, oats and honey. Oats, where's my fruit? Nectarines. All right, so I will make a cobbler from the nectarines. I'm just going to start with dessert first because... The oats are at the top of the list. So I'll skin the nectarines, pit them, and slice them from that point. And I'm actually going to hit them with a little bit of, it says vinegars, so I'm going to put a little bit of tarragon vinegar on those nectarines. And that's going to keep them from coloring while I'm working, just a little bit. Sugar, and that will go in the bottom of the little dishes, and then I will mix the honey and oats just a pinch of salt. What else do I need for that? That's it. Actually, that's good enough. So that'll be my cobbler, which I'll bake for about 25 minutes at 300 degrees.
And those oats, do you toast them or anything or no?
Mm-mm. Yeah, no. No. Sounds weird, does it?
I'm just curious.
No. just the oats and the honey. And all right, so going on to, oh my God, this is such a strange group of things, Donnie. Golden sea bream.
That's why I said it was vicious.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Golden sea bream for the last course, obviously, which I'm going to serve. I'm going to cook the cannellini beans down with a little bit of water and rosemary and salt and a little bit of extra virgin olive oil in the pot while they're cooking. And the sea bream, I will saute, brown on both sides, finish in the oven, and serve with the cannellini beans. I'll make a little relish from jalapeno peppers, a little bit of cilantro, chives, a little bit of lime juice, and extra virgin olive oil.
I realize I've given you no onion product, so please.
Okay, thank you. And a little bit of finely chopped shallot. So that'll be the relish, which will go really well with the cannellini beans and the sea bream. And then what am I left with here? Sardines. Oh, golly. All right, so zucchini, tahini, bacon. Oh, I should have put the bacon in with the beans. So the bacon will go in with the beans, so that's used. So zucchini, I will grill it. So I'll cut it into the batonet pieces, so long, sort of about the length of your finger and probably about the thickness of your finger, squared off. Grill those with olive oil and salt and pepper. And I'm going to take the tahini and the tatsoi. I'm going to chop the tatsoi and toss it with a little bit of a vinaigrette of, let's just say some sort of basic vinegar, like a white vinegar, actually. I'll even go towards. So mix a little bit of oil, the tahini to loosen it up, and a little bit of vinegar, and just lace that over the tatsoi and add the grilled zucchini to it. And the sardines, I'm going to do what you do. I'll just eat the sardines while I'm cooking with my glass of light red.
Now, do you like sardines?
Actually, someone sent me a can of sardines to try the other day, and they were unbelievably good. So, yes, apparently I do like sardines. Very much, actually. And they're kind of fun. I mean, it's a fun little thing to have while guests are hanging around, you know, just have them out. And if they do have bones, obviously remove those, but have the little fillets out and have a little pot of really good spicy mustard and some good crackers or toast points, whatever. And yeah, actually my brother-in-law and I used to always have smoked mussels together when I was really young while mom was cooking. So I do like those sorts of things, actually. That's it. All right, here's yours.
Okay. All right. Alligator, all onion product, tomato, basil, Italian parsley. You're going to give me arugula, you scratch that out, local lettuce. Citrus fruit, rice, nectarines, white peaches, lemon verbena, olive oil, butter, AP flour, cornmeal, eggs, capers, catfish, shrimp stock, celery.
That's a good way to end, with the catfish.
Catfish. We got to figure out what we're making down on the bayou.
Yep, you're making a southern meal, apparently.
You think?
Yes.
With the alligator and the catfish? Well, there's rice, which is good. I mean, what I need to do is basically make a stew with the catfish and the alligator, with a tomato, plenty of red onion. I need some peppers for it that I don't have. I mean, I can make the alligator stew almost like a sauce, like a cioppino or something like that. But use the capers in that and plenty of the parsley in that at the very end. But yeah, I'm kind of missing peppers. Mm-hmm. I need some kind of hot peppers in there. It's not going to work out. And the alligator, we just cut into small pieces to stew that. It won't take long either. Probably like 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Get the rice ready for that stuff. And then the catfish, I would cut into finger-sized pieces and toss that, the shrimp stock to cook the rice in. So that's a beautiful thing. Thank you for that. And lots of celery to go in there with the alligator broth, with the shrimp broth, and everything else is braising for the alligator. That uses some eggs and the cornmeal and flour. I'll cornmeal fry the catfish, and that's use that almost like a garnish for, honestly, I can just put that down on the side, almost like catfish French fries. Yeah, because you can just squeeze lemon on those guys. Maybe chop a little bit of basil for it. Oh, local lettuce. I guess I could make a dressing with the basil and verbena and dress some local lettuce with white peach, especially if they're not that ripe. The white peach is not that ripe. It'd be fine. Yeah.
There's Tony's Florida dinner.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a panhandle meal right there. Yeah, alligator stew.
I love alligator.
I think I'd be talking about making alligator stew when I woke up this
morning. Wanted to give you something, new and different, Tony. Mm-hmm. Stretch a little bit.
Wow. I think that's all the stretching time I have for today. Thanks very much for listening. If you want to download this or any other episodes of Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, please go to the WYPR website, wypr.org, and you can find the Formula Wolf page and drop down all the episodes. This will be the reprieve episode, of course. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Wolf or on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
And you can follow my Instagram, The Real Tony Foreman. Thanks very much for listening.
Happy Sunday.